file comes from the Blue Orchard Bee. We ask you to respect the copyright of this file, which belongs to the Charlotte Mason Institute, Andres Smith and Danielle Merritt Sanseri. The file is for personal use only. You may share with family, friends, and colleagues, but do not publish the material in any format, including in any electronic format, such as website, blogs, or otherwise, without permission from the Charlotte Mason Institute, Andres Smith, or Danielle Merritt Sanseri. Please note the views expressed in these files do not necessarily reflect the views of the Charlotte Mason Institute, Andres Smith, or Danielle Merritt Sanseri. It is important that you remember that information provided on this file is not intended to represent or to be construed or received as professional advice in matters of mental health. You are encouraged to work closely with a licensed mental health provider that fits your needs. Welcome to this week's session of the Blue Orchard Bee. Danielle begins a series of interviews with members from the pollinator community. These interviews will be posted from time to time. This week's interview is with Molly Gribble. Danielle interviews her to learn about her experience at a Ross Green conference. Ross Green was mentioned in Andy's video last week. Let's listen to this important conversation.
So the work of Ross Green is a topic that comes up quite a bit in the pollinator community. And we advocate that our caregivers seek out qualified expert advice. And Dr. Green is certainly one of those voices. So it's not surprising that he comes up a lot. He is the author of a number of books, including The Explosive Child and Raising Human Beings. And he is the founder of the nonprofit called Lives in the Balance, which provides access to free resources for caregivers and educators and can be found at livesinthebalance.org. So Molly's joining us today to share her recent experience at one of Dr. Green's conferences. So Molly, for those who aren't so familiar with Dr. Green's work, can you just start by sharing just a little bit about his approach that appeals to you as a Mason educator?
Well, I actually kind of got to him somehow. I don't remember. It was something through the first conference I went to like 2.5 years ago, through Alfie Cohn. And it turns out that he and Alfie Cohn were like friends. They grew up together. So they did have a podcast together, and I think somehow I connected them maybe through that. There's a podcast that where they talk about their different things, and they're both like against reward and punishment models. So they overlap a bit. And Alfie Cohn actually deals more with like neurotypical, and Ross Green is like the explosive child type of thing. So he's dealing more with the collaborative side. I think Alfie Cohn probably does that too. But so I started with The Explosive Child because of my son Moses, because he was an explosive child for sure. The book is hard to read. It's hard to get through. So while I was reading it, I started listening to the parent podcast. I've listened to a ton of those podcasts and went on the Lives in the Balance website and filled up out what's called an LSEP. That's kind of where you start. It's the assessment of lagging skills and unsolved problems. And the lagging skills are things like making transitions and being able to have a conversation without like basically losing it with your emotions. And those are just a couple examples of the lagging skills. So you basically check those off. And as you're checking them off, you think what problems come up that are related to this lagging skill. And that's really what you're focusing on is like what there's a certain way you word the problem. Like for example, difficulty copying 6 letters in handwriting class, you have to be really specific, that specific. And then you share it with the child in that way. That's called Plan B. Plan A is, arbitrary adult imposed consequences, like you did this, therefore I'm going to punish you, or even rewards, Plan A, like parents basically orchestrating the whole thing without the child's input. But plan B, you pose that problem to the child, like, I noticed you're having difficulty copying your six letters during, school time in the morning. And then you say, what's going on, or what's up, is what Dr. Green always says. And then you just listen to them and they tell you what's up. And it's usually not what you thought was up. That's the thing about it, is it's never what you thought it was. And that's the problem with plan A, is we're going around hitting the wrong, that like game where you hit the moles. We're just whacking the wrong mole. Like, it's not working because we're hitting the wrong concerns, because the child is sharing what's making it hard for them to do that thing. And I think the other nice part about it is, a lot of times as parents, like, we either feel like we're too strict or we're complete pushovers, but within plan B, you're also supposed to have time to express your own concerns, but that comes after the child's expressed their concerns, and your concerns are not your solutions. So you express, well, I'm concerned that you're not going to learn to copy your letters if you can't do a certain number every day, because that's how we learn. That's my pig in the background. So anyways, that's just an example. And then after that, you ask for their input about the solution, and you guys kind of, like, it's like ping pong, like, let's come up with this together, but always asking, because they'll come up with creative solutions, and a lot of times they work, but maybe not the first one. Like, you don't kind of put all your eggs in one basket. You always come back if something's not working. So that's the basic, like, that's a good example of just a real basic plan B conversation. And then plan C is like lowering your expectations. Sometimes a child, is never doing something. Like, for example, Moses was never putting his Legos away, like, ever. No matter what strategy I tried, my adult imposed ideas, it was never happening. That was something I had to plan C, because it was causing stress. He was never actually doing it. So what Dr. Green says is, if they're never doing it, it's probably not a realistic expectation. So I learned that from the beginning. I think the good thing about the conference was, on the podcast, parents call in and they give examples of what's going on, and then they problem solve it as far as they can, but the kid isn't usually on there. So the really good thing about going to a conference, and I've heard they have parent skill conferences, but I went to the professional one. The good thing about going is he goes through live, not live, but he goes through cases, like, from start to finish, which was very helpful. And he also goes through the drilling strategies, which didn't come that naturally to me. So sometimes when you're asking the child what's going on, they'll give you something, but you need more. Like, you need more information. So those are the ways to kind of, like, reflective listening, or there's a bunch of them. But that was more illuminating to me, because I feel like in the podcast, we never quite get there, if that makes sense. So just going to that was, I feel like CPS is something you have to practice over and over and over again, and you sort of have to immerse yourself in it, because it's so countercultural.
Yeah, it's a paradigm shift.
It's a huge paradigm shift. And like my friends, occasionally, like, one of my friends will watch my kids, and like, they'll try to dole out punishments, and my kids will be like, so and so did this punishment, and they know that's not how we operate. And then I have an opportunity to be like, well, we really work together to solve problems. Like, I don't just, or I try not to. I never come at it like, you're just wrong. But, like, I waffle back and forth sometimes too, like, because that's part of being human. But my kids are there to check me, because they now know that that isn't how we do things. you know, like we're gonna work on this together. Like I need you to listen to me kind of thing. So yeah, there's that. But yeah, it's a huge paradigm shift. It's a different way of thinking. And it's based on a lot of research. And it's I think the real plug for me with that is like they've studied reward and punishment systems in schools besides CPS because they're just using the same measures that the school was already using. So like CPS will come into a school and they'll, you know, start turning things around and then they'll measure the data again. And it's just as good with the added benefit that with rewarding and punishing behavior, you're only really changing that behavior. You're not solving anything. You're just changing behavior. And like when you're collaborating, not only are you solving a problem, you're developing those lagging skills that were, you know, what was leading to these problems in the first place. So it's like you're growing children in, I guess, what people would have referred to as they're really cognitive skills, but like critical thinking. They're learning to think about their problems and solve problems, which is huge. They're not just pawns in an adult game of chess, you know, they are actually, they're playing the game with you.
Yeah.
So.
Do you feel like CPS changes your relationship with your kids?
Totally. Yeah, we have a much better like connection. And especially with Sam, who is my child who has ADHD. CPS was studied first in kids with ADHD with a lot of success. And I saw that right away, like, oh, this kid really wants a say in what's going on. And he was totally in. Like we would have at first we would have these little formal meetings and I'd take him out just with me, like dinner or whatever. And we just talked through one or two problems and he was on board. And my daughter Mary, she's really on board too, and she really understands what's going on, like to the point where we can like joke about it. Like we were joking about like one of the pets like trying to problem solve something with the pig or whatever. Like we could actually just kind of quip about, you know, I wonder what's getting in his way. You know.
I think one thing that strikes me about Green's work, I feel like there's a lot of, you know, he's using different terminology, but when I read, or at least the way that I think about Mason and this idea that there are, you know, we have to observe and recognize the obstacles, and then we have a responsibility to remove the obstacles. I feel like there's a lot of consistency there. And she certainly, I think, because of her, you know, place and time, didn't have the collaborative aspect, but I really appreciate that kind of same thing. Like their behavior is telling you something. So you need to pay attention to it. And, you know, whatever it is that's getting in the way, then we have to work together to remove that and figure out how to navigate that.
Yeah, what's really struck me along the way too is our obsession with behavior. And that's a huge obsession within the church too. Even though we know the Bible says that God looks at the heart, which is really what this whole thing is about. Like what's going on underneath this is like what's going on in this person, like in their personhood. Because biters bite and hitters hit and pinchers pinch and criers cry. You know, like this is all just a signal. Like it's somebody's brand of I'm having trouble. And if we're focusing on behavior, we're just like missing the point entirely. And kids that have what we deem as worse behaviors kind of get the short end of the stick because they're the ones that end up getting punished even more when they really need the most help. Which is sad, like really sad.
I agree. I think that we have a lot of work to do in the church on this. Molly, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your experience with Dr. Green's work.
You're welcome.
We hope you enjoy this meaningful conversation between Danielle and Molly, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Stay safe.